from the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Well, good morning. It is June 28th. And one of our fave days, because we have a clean shirt on. It's usually yellow, because yellow is Wednesday. And I don't know, we should probably change it to green, the color of money. No, wait a minute. It would be gold, because gold is the color of money.
Yeah, right? Real money.
That's real money. Right. Yeah, we'll say it's perfect.
But electronic money has no color.
It has no color, so we could go bare-shirted.
That's right.
Electronic money.
A transparent shirt.
Transparent. That's right. We like to be transparent, just like the government.
Well, as it relates to your money, you know, transparency is the name of the game.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to have anything that no one knows about. That's not allowed.
Well, they're going to just blockchain us, and that'll make it better, right?
So they say.
Andrew Goss is the voice you hear in my headphones and you hear in your little speaker. And he's a currency historian, and he's a nationally recognized one at that. He studies this thing that they called money, and it's curious. I just never really thought about it. You know, we wear different color shirts because of Adam Bergstrom. You know, yellow is Wednesday day, and yellow is the color of gold because they call it the yellow metal, right?
Yes.
Of course, those days are gone.
A fond memory.
Fond.
Or a barbarous relic.
A barbarous relic.
Take your pick. You know, there are two schools of thought there.
Yeah. Well, speaking of blockchain, boy, these boys had a hard time this past week. I'm not sure what was going on there, but one of our listeners wrote in to tell us he's a blockchain or Bitcoin-y kind of geek. And he gave us an idea of why a Bitcoin lost $600. Yeah.
Just I don't one, follow it that closely.
Yeah, one day. I just kind of want to.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah. Oops, there and goes I know, another.
Well, I do know. You know. I do know that we had that cyber hack variation released in Europe.
Well, yeah, I wanted to ask you
weekend.
About that, man.
And those guys are demanding their ransom in Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So you should be okay for a minute, you know, as there's a little demand. I understand they really got into some high-level networks. So, yeah, we'll see.
So when you, I see. So when the ransomers, the crooks, the hackers, they can get money from somebody to...
They demand their payment in Bitcoin.
Bitcoin, and that can't be tracked.
Correct.
That's the whole point, right?
So saith the Bitcoinies.
The Bitcoiners.
The Bitcoiners do say that, yeah.
The Bitcoin-y people, yeah. Okay.
I don't know. Any monetary system that's based on trust of any kind arouses my suspicion.
But we trust guys like you if we buy a gold coin.
No, you don't.
No, we don't. We're not.
You don't.
Sorry, yeah.
I mail it to you. Yeah, you trust guys when you take a contract or an option. Or a future, or you let someone else store your gold and silver coin. But for me, For the coins, I don't ask you to trust me for the grade or the authenticity. We have the coins certified. I don't ask you to trust me for the value. You can look them up on any popular website or look in Coin World magazine or get your guidebook of United States coins. There are a great many price discovery points in the world. And then I don't ask you to trust me that I'm going to have them when you need them, because you buy them, I ship them right to your door. That's it. You put them in your vault. Big difference.
You can even go on Google and look at the NGC coin price guide, which
is one of the best.
NGCcoin.com.
Yeah.
And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no.
Just to kind of get a general. How are these prices fairly accurate on
here? Yeah, they're fairly accurate. If you follow through, they have auction records that kind of back them up, which is where they get the prices from. Uh-huh. You know,
it's pretty cool looking little website.
Awesome. Cool looking. I mean, that thing is
they
major.
Got a little buffalo nickel here. Let's click on that little pumpkin.
Mm-hmm.
So we got a shield 5 cents, 1866. Let's click on that. What are these guys? Did they have nickels back then?
Yeah, look at it. It's a shield nickel.
Wow.
From 1866. And you know what's unique about that year is that was the year that we decided, maybe we should believe in God after seeing, you know, the youth of America spread out on fields up and down.
Oh, this is right after
the
Civil War.
That's right. So a minister wrote to Abraham Lincoln and said, you know, this is the problem. When God is taken away from the country, we become godless.
Oh.
It's time to put our national motto back on the coin or on the coin. And sure enough, in 1866, in God we trust.
Is that the first time they did
that? That's the first time it appeared on a U.S. coin.
A little buffalo nickel.
Well, it's not a buffalo.
No, it's it's an Indian.
It's a shield nickel.
A shield.
Yes, it has a shield. I see. You know, like a currency shield or a treasury shield on one side.
Well, I want to see what
that. And the big five on the other. So, you know, unfortunately, the year after that, they came up with these nickels that didn't say cents on it, in 1883, and so the hucksters in New York City would take these 1883 nickels. They didn't say cents. They just had a five on it. Uh-huh. And they would dip them in gold, and then they would wait at the ships for the Irish immigrants to come in and say, well, you got to turn your money in. You got to, here's a $5 gold piece. And it was a nickel. God,
it was a nickel. Oh, I just Googled images for a shield nickel.
Uh-huh.
Really beautiful. I see.
Yeah.
They got a five there, and then on the other side, they got this really nice kind of whole... In God we trust.
A shield. In God we trust. Yeah, a shield. You know, defend ourselves. Defense. That's.
I wonder what you could buy for nickel right after the Civil War.
A lot.
Really?
A lot. Yeah, that was when, you know, your average typical wage for a wage earner, laborer, skilled craftsman was around $25 a week.
Wow. $25. Yeah. Now, did Abe use the treasury to print these guys or.
No. This is what we call subsidiary coinage. So the big money, these were, of course, made by the mint out of nickel, the metal. But the big money, right, the paper notes that were emitted from the treasury at the time, right, they were treasury notes. And this is the very first instance of the greenback just a few years earlier, where you're essentially using the faith and credit of the United States not to issue a bond, but to issue the paper note that people pass and spend.
That was called a United States note.
Well, a greenback was the popular terminology.
Yeah, but it was a United States note.
Yes, it was. So, it was the note, a direct obligation of the Treasury.
It wasn't a debt instrument. Well,
it was a debt instrument, but it bore no interest.
Bore no interest.
Like the dollar. We spent $290 billion a year in interest.
On these
paper notes. On our own money.
Yeah, yeah.
For using our own money. Can you imagine how insane that is?
Good for us.
Yeah, good for us. Yeah, leverage
as a financial tool. I wonder if President Trump has figured that out. So maybe. So let's see. So Abe printed United States notes during the war.
Yeah, really the first instance of widespread usage. We had treasury notes during the War of 1812, and in fact, that's where he got the idea. So we needed money. We didn't have it. Hey, let's issue some treasury notes to pay for all these war supplies.
Because the charter on the Fed that the British owned part of
Had been canceled.
Perspired, and that was what the war was about, you told us.
Well, I believe it was.
Yeah, well,
okay, so
we call that
circumstantial evidence.
Oh, I see. All right.
Good enough for the media. It's good enough for me.
Yeah, so, but then Jackson printed his own notes, Andrew.
Did not. Jackson did not. He did is he fired him and said, hey, can't you read the Constitution? You can't read the Constitution? Let's read it again together. No state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debt.
But Mr. President, CNN here, what are you going to do? Just kidding.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to cancel this.
What about your wife's foundation? Yeah. Come on,
right.
Mr.
Okay. I'm going to cancel this monopolistic charter that's been granted to the Second Bank of the United States. I'm going to cancel their charter to be the exclusive wellspring of national money.
Did he?
And I'm going to return it to the people where it belongs. That's the Ninth Amendment. If we haven't taken this power to ourselves, then it belongs to everybody. And I'm not going to say that one person has a monopoly. You know, same thing happened with Howard Hughes when Juan Tripp there wanted Pan American Airways to be the only airline in the country.
All right. Well, so Abe said, I mean, I'm sorry, Jackson ran on the platform that he was going to get rid of the den of vipers.
Kill it. I will kill this bank. If you vote for me, kind of like Donald Trump and repeal Obamacare.
Okay, he just said, if you do this, I'm going to do
this. If you vote for me, I'm going to do this.
So the boys, we can assume, owned the second bank of the United States, right?
And the Congress that passed the recharter bill.
Okay.
And then when it got to the president's desk, he said, veto.
Okay. So when he kicked the den of vipers out, then who did the notes?
Anyone who wanted to. You could do notes, Patrick.
Oh, just so I had gold backing.
Subject to the laws of fraud. You bet.
Okay.
You bet. Okay. Absolutely.
Why didn't he print his own notes?
Because he didn't think government had that power. Hmm. And I agree.
Because they took out omit bills and credit out of the Constitution.
That's right. That was in the Articles of Confederation
to omit bills of credit.
And that's where the Constitution, the Continental, actually came into circulation. And George Washington complained that scarcely a wagon load of Continentals would buy a wagon load of provisions for his army. Mm. So the inflation, the Congress, with no ability to tax, they just simply created bills of credit, kind of like they do today. Said, here, let's just print these notes and put them into circulation. People rejected them. They passed them as quickly as they got them. Of course, there were the modicum of legal tender laws, and they shamed people. What do you mean you're not going to take these notes?
What do you mean? Aren't you patriotic?
Yes, aren't you? Right, exactly. And, in private, people hated them, and the phrase, not worth a continental, became, because that's what the money was eventually worth. They created so much of it without a means of paying it back. And it's curious because in 1686, the Reverend Samuel Adams, the father of Sam Adams, had created a land bank in Massachusetts, where farmers based the currency issue on the land that they owned. And the United States, fledgling as it was, had all of this Western territory that they could have easily based their currency upon it.
You think?
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, they could have. But Robert Morris was in charge of finance, and he's another one of those shadowy characters who was partners with Thomas Willing, who was also connected to the Bank of England. So, that whole cadre there was really, I believe, didn't want the Continental to succeed because it would have given the government and the army the means to have money without being beholden to people like Robert Morris.
Sure, right? Sure, but what I don't understand is, so when Jackson, they called him Old Hickory.
Yes.
Because?
Because he was tough as a hickory tree.
Hickory tree or something.
Tough
like that. He'd whip
is.
You on the side of the head.
Oh, man, he'd whack you with that cane.
Well, Old Hickory got rid of the Second Bank of the United States when he was elected. That's what he ran on. So, but if the Treasury needed dollars, then they would have to borrow them. He didn't do that much, right?
He didn't borrow anything?
No, I mean...
He didn't borrow anything?
I mean,
every dollar that he collected in revenue went to one thing.
Huh.
Paying off the national debt.
Oh, I see.
That's it, man. He's like...
They didn't have a big budget of like...
No, and we're going to have an even smaller
budget.
Vaccinations
and stuff
budget.
Like that.
And
whatever.
When you'd ask...
whatever. Sorry.
No FDA. No.
EPA.
No. There was no EPA. There was right. No... There
gotcha.
Was no.
I mean, they didn't really need a lot of money to do stuff.
Well, to do the limited functions of the Constitution, it's only when you abuse the general welfare clause, when you say, okay, to see to the general welfare of my people... Everything else stems
right.
from that one little clause in the Constitution.
Gender-friendly bathrooms and stuff.
How many bathrooms you have? Yes.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. Uh-huh.
How many hours you can work,
sure.
how much you can get paid, how long you can drive a truck, whether
well,
or not you have to wear a helmet,
really,
whether you have to wear a seatbelt, whether or not... Can I go on or
no,
am I
that's the thing. Right. I'm getting sick here. That's all under the general welfare clause.
Yes, huh? Yes. Because, uh-huh.
okay.
you know, mommy and daddy have to take care of us.
Oh,
and
thanks.
Now you've heard the new latest wonderful idea.
Wow,
of
just
the allowance.
Share it with me.
The allowance.
The allowance?
Yeah.
What's that? The allowance?
Yeah, the allowance.
Oh, you're talking about give everybody...
$12,000.
$12,000 a year, right?
Yeah.
That's a Zuckerberg thing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a lefty thing. We shouldn't let Zuckerberg take credit for Karl Marx's idea.
Oh, it's Karl Marx.
Yeah, it's socialism in its purest form.
So this would work how?
Well, you share the wealth of the nation with anyone.
Uh-huh.
Anyone sitting in a coffee shop with a bun and a computer gets a check.
Oh, for 12 grand.
Yeah.
A year.
And then they can sit there and, you know, order their coffee in the morning, nurse it all day. I don't know what they do exactly. But they create, apparently, is the thing that Zuckerberg says, that, you know, if he didn't have a safety net under him and this sort of a guaranteed payment for his food and housing, that he could have never gotten Facebook off the ground. I feel bad for him.
I feel bad for him, too.
And Bill Gates, same thing. You know, he says the same thing. Is very good idea. And only cost $1 trillion or so a year, Patrick.
Well, that's it. No problem.
What the heck?
Yeah, that's
what are we,
pretty
pikers? We're pikers. Well, if we'll give Social Security to those 65 and older, well, then why won't we give a minimum basic income to those between 18 and 65? Uh-huh. Just only makes sense.
Are there not some European countries that do that?
Goodness, yeah. Check out Sweden. I mean, you know,
do they give a,
Norway, they've done an experiment, but Sweden is already putting money away now. I think this is news today that they're putting money away for their next generation. They have the 86 moment when Alan Greenspan in 1986 was appointed to the Greenspan Commission by Reagan to study Social Security. And he said, oh, boys, they're going to have a big problem here in 2011. We're going to have 70 million people retired. And they're going to be taking more money out of the Social Security Trust Fund than people are putting in. And we're going to exhaust the fund. So we should build up a cash reserve in the Social Security Trust Fund.
I remember.
And that's what we did. Biggest tax increase in history. 15% of payroll went into this fund that by Bill Clinton's term had grown into a nice, big, fat endowment that, had it been left alone, could now be called upon to pay the Social Security recipient.
Back then, when Greenspan was doing this biggest tax thing, did the people know, or did Congress know, that there wasn't any money in there?
Well, no, they didn't. The lockbox, is that what you're referring to?
No, I'm talking, yeah, because
it's like they sneak it in the language, Patrick. What they did is say, oh, we're going to put this money away. It's going to come out of payroll. It can't be touched for anything else. And then they put a line in there that says, the trustees of the fund will invest the money. Okay, where are you going to invest it in? Oh, let's invest
it in
IOUs from the Treasury. Sounds good.
Wow.
Yeah, I quoted Chuck Rangel in Uncle Sam Cooks the Books as saying, what better investment could there be? What could be better than that?
So you taught us that before Johnson,
yes,
that they kind of left it alone?
Yeah, they did, because it was viewed as a fund.
As a fund, as a trust fund.
And Johnson kind of started the whole... A unified budget. Unified budget.
I like that.
So instead of having two things to look at, one the Social Security Trust Fund and the other, we'll just put it all in one and you can look at a unified budget.
Oh, yeah, make it easier.
So it wasn't really that they were borrowing the money yet, right? They were just unifying the budget so that...
Oh, he didn't slide any over to make his numbers
look
better?
You just, in the unified budget, you subtract the surplus in the Social Security Trust Fund from the deficit that you're spending to pay for the Vietnam War.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and then you have one number that's and actually positive. Oh, well, that number's positive because if we steal all the money in the Social Security Trust Fund, we could pay for the Vietnam War, and so then it's a zero, you know, we have no deficit, zero, like Bill Clinton did years later. You know, took a play right out of Johnson's playbook, wrote that big zero on the board. That's it. No more budget deficit. Now, what are we going to spend the surplus on? And boy, did we spend the surplus.
Boy, people to this day still hearken back to that day. And they say, well, Bill Clinton balanced the budget and not.
Yeah, I think I'm in print calling the president a liar. Trump is not the first one to be called a liar as a president. No, I called Bill Clinton out as a liar on many occasions.
Oh, boy. 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at oneradionetwork.com. Just a quick side note. I watched a movie last night called Kill the Messenger, which was about Gary Webb.
San Jose Mercury News.
San Jose Mercury News.
Yeah, not supposed to talk about that. And they warned him, too. What's the problem?
What a story.
It's not like they didn't call him into the office and say, hey, get off this story. You know, if he would have just gotten off the story, everything would have been fine.
If you want to watch a cool movie, Jeremy Renner, quite a good actor, played Gary Webb. And Gary Webb stumbled upon this whole Contra drug, CIA, cocaine.
Whatever umbrella you want to put it on. It was basically allowing the Iran-Contras, allowing the Nicaraguan
rebels
to import drugs into the United States to pay for the weapons that we were smuggling them for their war.
Because
We didn't like the government.
We didn't like the government.
We weren't like the government. You know what? We were meddling in the affairs of Nicaragua.
We were not meddling. We were not meddling in the elections in Nicaragua, were we? Oh. Didn't I hear that somewhere? No, well, okay.
Yeah, okay. So we were simply allowing the opposition to the ruling party.
Yeah.
We were allowing the opposition to have a free pass to import into the United States using CIA operatives and CIA hardware and DEA concurrence.
Lots of cocaine.
Lots of cocaine. Lots of marijuana. And it wasn't until a pilot with a CIA ID card, how convenient, on his person, Gene Hassenfuss.
Yeah, yeah.
He get shot down by the Sandinistas and dragged before the world and said, hey, I'm a CIA pilot.
Well, so what didn't the United States like about, or the deep state, the CIA?
Oh, they're communists.
Like about the people in power there.
Oh, they were communists. They were communists.
But what was the real reason?
That's they were communists, Patrick.
No, what was the real reason?
They were communists.
Tell me the real reason.
Well, they wouldn't let the boys play in their play box.
Oh, you know, this is our sandbox.
You stay the hell out. We're going to do our things our way here.
So they're dirty commies and we got to get you.
Yeah, you're dirty commie. The filthiest kind.
And what year was that? I don't even remember. Well, I think the reason I thought about it is because there was a big event that happened during that time that they said in the movie didn't get covered because they were covering the Monica Lewinsky thing.
Of course.
Thing.
Huge distraction.
You think that could have been a planned thing, too?
Well, I know that
how could they plan that? Well,
as we've seen in the recent news,
apparently
the president, the CEO of the news agency, comes into the newsroom and says, that's enough coverage of this. Let's go back to covering that.
Yeah, that's on record. That's enough covering the Paris thing. The CEO of CNN said, let's go back to the Russian
story. So apparently, I don't care what the subjects are. I'm just saying that apparently the CEO comes into the newsroom and gives the marching orders on what we're going to cover and what we're not going to cover. So you could take it out whatever you want in column A and whatever you want out of column B. That's enough of the Iran-Contra thing. Let's cover Monica Lewinsky.
Right, right. But
because
I mean,
it's all about ratings, isn't it?
Sure, but
I mean,
has
that also
always
been revealed?
It's always been like
no,
that.
No, it has not.
But you don't think back
it
in... Would,
it was not.
Back in
Mary
the 60s?
Mary Kay Reasoner. No.
With Walter Cronkite, they'd say,
No, they had to infiltrate Walter Cronkite personally. The CIA personally
That's
recruited
right, yeah.
Cronkite. But the rest of the people in the newsroom were doing their newsroomy job.
Really?
So they kind of stuck their nose under the tent to get in, but that's the 60s. Now, not only is the camel in the tent, but everyone that was is outside. So it is the mechanism, what is now being called the deep state. Yeah. I kind of like that.
It's
that's better than the boys.
Kind of like deep doo-doo.
A deep state, like a deeply burrowed tick that's in there so good you just can't get them out, right? Okay. That's the deep state.
Yeah.
And the deep state decides by sending their CEOs into the newsroom what's covered and what isn't covered.
Sure.
That becomes the driving force of the day.
And the deep state, how do they have such control over people like what?
Because they have control of the money.
Okay, so they control...
give me the power to coin a nation's money, and I care not who makes its laws, because I can influence everything with money.
So the deep state would be the boys, the bankers, whatever, the FDA, Monsanto, the banks...
Do you know who Catherine Grant's father was?
Catherine, Washington Post.
Eugene Levy.
Well...
You know who Eugene Levy was? Or Eugene Meyer, forgive me.
No.
Eugene Meyer, M-E-Y-E-R.
Yeah.
He was famous for the duplicate bond scandal at the New York Fed when he was an officer.
Oh, was
there.
He now?
Yes. So they were fanned out after the charter of the Federal Reserve banks to buy all the critical media. And they've only consolidated those interests ever since. So as much as right-thinking congressmen and what and so forth, and they were out there, your Wright Patmans and your Henry B. Gonzalez from Texas and others, to try to regulate and control their power. These guys just chipped away at it until finally now, what do we have? We have 90% of the media, television, print, newspaper, everything, right, is controlled by six corporations, right?
Correctamundo.
Six. And those six corporations, believe me, are not independent corporations. So just like MasterCard and Visa and Discover all appear to be different, they're all the same. And so these guys cooperate just as they cooperate at higher levels. And through these pyramidal structures, they control the message, the meme. This is why you could put on one news channel, leftist leaning, and hear the talking points, hear what they're talking about, and then just switch channels to another left-leaning news agency, and they're talking about the same thing. Is it a coincidence? No.
Well, things like CBS owns Showtime and all that kind of stuff. Time Warner, CNN, HBO, Time, Warner Brothers, just the big ones. Viacom, MTV, and Nickelodeon, Paramount Pictures. Wow. Mm. Disney, Marvel, ESPN, ABC, Miramax. Yeah. These are all the movies, too.
Yeah,
New York.
Movies, yeah. It's all popular culture. Yeah. You know, how we pervert our youth. Forgive me, I'll get on the soapbox like the preachers now and talk about the
USA Today
permissiveness in movies and these glorifying of the counterculture and drug use and bad behavior of every sort.
Transgender things.
Yeah, all of it is all promoted in the movies. Just, you know, much the same way that it was in the day that the Federal Reserve was just founded. So they used propaganda. They understood how to use propaganda. They made a science and a study of it. In fact, they used our universities to give them the data that they needed to use, well, I don't know what else to call it, mind control. What is it when you're constantly feeding people misinformation, what we call now fake news? Yeah. It's just fake from whose perspective? That's the question.
Isn't it interesting how President Trump, that word wasn't really even out there 6 months ago or a year ago? Fake news?
Fake news, no.
That's pretty cool. I mean, it's like, you know, it's probably one of the number one things people Google. It's probably trending. I don't know, fake news.
Trending.
Yeah. Fake news is trending.
You think of the analytics available now where, you know, in real time you can hear what people are thinking, what they're talking about, and what they're posting and what they're, you know, highlighting. It's an incredible. Facebook hit 2 billion users today.
Whoa.
2 billion.
2 billion.
2 billion. And the core users, those 800 million that spend hours and hours on Facebook. I mean, I've had people say to me, Andy, how come you don't respond to my Facebook message? I'm sorry. I don't go on it every day and sit there 2 or 3 hours, as many people do. But using the analytics from the folks that do, they can pretty much tell you what America's thinking at any given time.
Speaking of that, Google kind of got
smacked in the pants.
Smacked in the pants for, what is it, 2.5? Let me get the.
I think they were stealing cookies from the cookie jar. They had a $3 billion fine, and they promised not to do it again.
In the EU, right?
Right.
And they
look down on monopolies that they don't control.
I see. So they were, they were just kind of cooking the results of things to benefit stuff that they owned.
Yeah, and their advertisers, yes.
Good.
Just as you would expect them to do. You know, give them that power and then don't expect them to abuse it. That's absurd. They have the most perfect information in all of Europe. Like we just said, they know what people are searching. They know what people are looking for. Oh, look, so somebody's searching for a wheelbarrow in Cologne. Let's aim them at our partner here who sells wheelbarrows.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so using that sort of influence in the consumer behavior of Europe, that flies in the face of those politicians who believe they control everything.
And who were the what was the European entity that levied this fine on Google? 2.7 billion. Oh, a billion EU, which is really nearly.
And forgive me, I don't know the name, but it's the agency European that decides whether they exist or not. I'm sure of that.
The European Union's antitrust regulator
there it
on
is.
Tuesday.
There it is.
Google fined 2.7 billion.
Antitrust.
Saying its search
monopoly
engine
busters
stacks the deck in favor of its own comparison shopping
Duh.
Services.
Duh.
Duh. Wow.
Like, oh, well, I would expect Google to be totally objective when they give me advice on which washing machine to buy.
I think so.
Oh, of course they're going to be objective and fair. Anybody with the best washing machine, doesn't matter whether they pay Google or not, they're going to get in the listings, aren't they?
Well, Andrew, knowing what you know, why would you, can you conjecture why that's not going to happen in this country? Fine.
Why? Because... Well, we have an entirely...
Well,
we love Monopoly here. J.P. Morgan famously said he hates competition, despises it. The worst thing ever.
Like it.
Hard to make money when there's competition. So,
we love it.
You know, we have a different environment in the U.S. Because once you have somebody controlling that, well, then you control them. And where was it that seed money came from for Google again?
You're just not making that up, right?
Let me think.
You're not doing an Alex Jones on me.
Damn it, it's...
Or Megyn Kelly?
It's eluding me. Well, didn't we actually go to the actual website? Aren't you one of those web-a-geeks over there?
Yeah.
And when I told you this the first time... And we went to the, they actually have
a corporation,
an investment vehicle that they invest in these promising technologies.
Good for them.
And what could be more promising than Google and Facebook?
Come
on. Those things were promising at the time that the national security apparatus decided, well, let's give them some seed money and see how they do.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you watch this movie, The Messenger, what happened was that they went out full force and just discredited Gary Webb like, oh, it was terrible.
Like they do.
Oh, man. It was
like they did
terrible.
What Jim Garrison when he launched
exactly.
the only prosecution JFK. Into the JFK assassination, and he's sitting, and they show a great scene of it, Oliver Stone and JFK.
Yeah.
He's sitting in his bed with his wife, and all of a sudden, you know, on NBC comes this, oh, Jim Garrison is such a bad guy, and here's what he did that's so bad.
Yeah.
And they assassinated his character, so that then when he tried to be the independent voice of reason prosecuting an assassination of a president, he looked like a kook.
Well, to make matters worse, they kind of piled on Jim Webb of the Mercury News, San Jose, because he was found shot in 2004 in his apartment. Check
suicide.
This out.
Yeah.
Two bullets into his head.
Yeah,
and they said
himself.
They said it was suicide.
Yeah, well, you know,
how
the first
do you do
one,
that? How do you...
It's hard. You really have to have willpower to shoot yourself in the head
twice. Yeah.
I mean, if the first one doesn't kill you,
ow.
And you stand there going, ow, that kind of hurts. But I think I'm going to do it again because I'm so miserable.
God, boy.
Yeah, what they expect us to believe. And then that's the official report. And so and I talked about that photographer that I met, Grodin. Robert Grodin.
Well, that was a JFK thing, wasn't it?
He was a JFK guy. He was
right.
He was probably in his mid-50s when I met him 20-some-odd years ago. So he's probably in his 70s now. Still around, I think. I would check it out. But I had a conversation with him about, like, so you're telling me that these autopsy reports, these photos that you were given, he was hired by the House Select Committee on Assassinations to examine the autopsy photographs, which had been in the National Archives since they were taken on the day after Mr. Kennedy's assassination.
These were the photos that were taken when they took the body,
the
alleged body to Washington.
Yeah, there's another one, right? Okay. So Grodin said he looked at these photos, and to this day, and back then, he said they are fake.
Ooh.
They've been altered this way and that way and so forth. And so I'm like, aren't you afraid walking around with this? He goes, well, the most fearful I was in my life was when those armed guards led me into this government facility
Whoops.
That no one had been in.
Whoops.
And I was put in a room with these photographs, and I set them in front of me, and I realized they were fake. And at that moment, thinking, who else could have faked these photos except the people that are guarding this door? That's the most afraid that he ever was in his entire life.
Yeah.
And I can understand that. You know, it's like when you realize that everything you suspected is in fact true, that's when the fear sets in. And I'm very grateful to Robert Grodin for sharing that information. But like everything else, wouldn't that have made front page news? Shouldn't that have been splashed all over everywhere? Hey, these photos are fake and here's how they're fake? Not a peep. I mean, no coverage whatsoever. So they came away with different conclusions, the House Select Committee on Assassinations. You should probably read their reports.
They did say, didn't they? They did say that more than Lee was.
Maybe it was a conspiracy.
Maybe there was somebody. Yeah. But just so you know, we're not making gossip up about the whole CIA contra Nicaraguan thing. Some years later, I think it was 98, or I don't know, the whole CIA did a whole report and said,
I'm sorry. They did a mea culpa.
It was true. Yeah, yeah, it was all true.
Sorry to say that it was all true, fellas.
It was all true.
Yeah, and that's what I mean by source material, folks.
Yeah.
So when we talk about something, if it's speculation, I'll surely tell you that. But if it's coming from source material, I mean, you have to establish that as well-founded fact. It's pointless to argue about whether or not we meddled in the Nicaraguan elections. Hmm. It's such a well-proven fact that it's pointless.
So I wonder where...
Like climate change.
Yeah, I wonder where the CIA gets their money now. Some people conjecture it could be they're still involved with drugs, with the... Afghanistan and stuff like that.
It's a lucrative business. And, you know, there are CIA companies. I mean, they have corporations that they call them the company for a reason, because they actually use private enterprise to shield a great many of their activities. So they have companies, corporations. Many suspect IBM was one of those corporations. Again, that's not well-founded, but...
And presidents would have to be privy to all this?
No.
Really?
No. CIA kind of, I mean, if they ask about it, maybe they'll be told. But if they don't, it's not like the CIA goes to the president and says, oh, we're doing this, we're doing that, we're doing this, and we're doing that.
Yeah, they're not called black ops for nothing.
Yeah, it's a what do they call, plausible deniability and a need to know. Yeah, he doesn't need to know about this. We'll just let him know what we did, what the result was.
Well, how is it that most of the world knows that the CIA has been involved with Al-Qaeda and whatever, all this terrorism stuff and in Syria and for years, I mean, forever, right? But you know, Americans don't know it.
Well, and that's where you get to the point. So in the past,
the whole world knows it.
Government, the CIA, and other black operations conducted themselves in such a way of being fearful of discovery by the media, right? So that sort of limited their activities, what they could and couldn't do. You know, it was only when the idea that, okay, media's in on it too, and now we can count on them to cover up things, they become more emboldened, right? They do things out in the open. So the what shall we call them? The non-aligned nations, the non-controlled media, they see it and report it and, you know, make it well-known fact, whereas we ignore it, bury it, and don't talk about it. That's all. Just
so
leave,
I suspect
it off leave it out of the papers.
Yeah, the culture must be such that these people really think that what they're doing is for the benefit of the...
Oh, goodness, yes.
Right?
These are patriots to the core.
They really believe that... You
talk
know,
to like, Oliver North.
Or G. Gordon Liddy.
Yeah.
These kind of people.
Oh, yeah.
Believe,
I'm not saying they're bad folks. They believe...
This is what they believe.
They're doing what is in the best interest
of the
United States. And that taking America first to that level is beyond me, okay? So I'm okay with America first in America, but don't go to another country and start America first thing because, you know, that's immoral in my view.
It's not working out very well.
No, and it hasn't, but of course it is the hook on which these folks hang their hat. You know, I'm doing this for God and country.
Sure.
Well, don't do it in my name. You know, don't go and tell another country what they should or shouldn't do in my name.
Well, they don't. They just do it under the covers.
That's right. They
don't do it in your name.
Oh, yeah, you don't need to know. Yeah, we will give you plausible deniability. You don't have to know that we did this.
Wasn't it the Kennedys? They were pretty intent on busting up the CIA, right?
Oh, goodness.
No.
Oh,
What was his quote? John?
Oh, we wanted to splinter it into 1,000 pieces and throw it to the winds.
Ooh, man.
Paraphrase, but that was...
And he's president when he said that?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, he was president when he said that.
You talk about poking the
giant
in the eye.
He was pissed about the Bay of Pigs.
Yeah.
Man,
what a mess.
Yeah, he was lied to, and he thought, you know, his military-industrial complex had pretty much pulled the wool over his eyes, and he was really angry.
That was the thing that Eisenhower started, right?
Yeah.
And that they were going to go in and kill Castro.
Well, it was going to be Cuban people that were revolting in their own country.
Yeah.
And then in the midst of the operation, they come to him and say, okay, we'll send in the Air Force and the Marines now. It's like, let's invade Cuba.
And Kennedy said,
I'm I'm not doing that. That wasn't part of the deal. You said the Cubans were going to do this, and we were just going to help them. That's what we did. So don't expect me to launch an airstrike on the beach now just because these guys can't get through the swamp.
Whoa. What year was that?
62.
Wow. And so Kenny said, no way, Jose. You're not using my jets, dude.
Yeah, and I think the whole Kennedy thing, as I, in my more mature years, look back, I think it was a whole misunderstanding. Can you believe it? Like, I believe Joe Kennedy told the people that supported his son that he could get him to do whatever they wanted to do. So I could just see Joe Kennedy telling the boys in Chicago,
oh, sure,
hey, don't worry about it, man. You know, he'll take care of everything. We'll get everything under control. You won't have to worry about a thing.
Right.
And then once Joe Kennedy made the suggestion to his son, hey, leave these guys alone, man. Why are you going after our friends in Chicago? And John Kennedy said, get out of my office and don't ever come
really,
back.
Do you really you think know? That's what happened?
Well, yeah, I do think that's what happened. And so then the boys felt they were double-crossed and that, you know, they counted on Joe Kennedy's son, the ultimate Joe Kennedy, the ultimate insider, former ambassador to England, king of the appease, partners in the booze business, bootlegger.
Scotch bootlegger, man.
Yeah, and, you know, Fitz, the mayor of Boston and his side of the family, that's where the Fitzgerald thing came from. So the connections there were so solid.
Wow.
That the boys figured, okay, we'll get this guy in. He'll do what we tell him to do. They didn't realize that John Kennedy was his own man. He was so sick. He was really ill.
Oh.
Physically ill, right?
He was in a back brace. Most of it after he came back from the war.
Yeah, he was getting those speedball cocktails every day.
Man.
And so he kind of felt, well, I'm not here that long anyway. He had this premonition like Abe Lincoln of dying early.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do the best I can, and boy, did he do the
God love
best
him.
He could.
So he really was the real deal. I kind of think he was.
I knew
that as a kid for some reason.
Yeah.
I just knew that he was
something. I think he was. Wow. Yeah, I think he was something different, and he resented. I mean, imagine, if you will, growing up at the knee of a guy like Joseph Kennedy. And first of all, it was his older brother, Joe, that was intended to follow the path of John. John was never intended to be anything but, you know, playboy. That's what he was. He was good at it.
He was good at that.
Yeah, and so Joseph was the golden child.
I see.
And he perished in World War II, and so then the mantle was shifted to John, not by choice.
And then, wow, from there, then Bobby and then his son. Wow. Man, what a story.
Yeah, I doubt if any other Kennedys will be taking that path anytime soon.
Oh, probably not.
But who knows, man? They're a tough clan.
Well, you can see, as on the real world of money, we go places where no man had gone before, and we don't plan any of this stuff, and it's great fun. Hope you enjoyed the last 45 minutes of a little bit of Andrew Goss's take on the world and how we got to where we are. We're going to dig into some of your emails and look at some of the current news. We have some tape on Warren Buffett talking about health care, and he may know his thing or three, or at least some ideas. He's got a lot of money. I guess, Andrew, when you have a lot of money, people listen to you. So we'll listen to Warren. And first off, though, we've got some really good news. We're going to tell you about California, as wacko as they are, and what they did recently with glyphosates. But first, this on the dangers of those things. Previously, with research scientist at MIT, Stephanie Seneff, Ph.D., and the curious connections between these glyphosates, Roundup, GMOs, and sulfur.
So if you simply put the glyphosate in place of the glycine in the sulfur transferase, you will not be able to get the sulfate from the cholesterol sulfate to some other molecule, such as the heparin sulfate. The cell won't be able to defend itself with sulfate if it can't put the sulfate there. But it's really, really important to be able to do that because, for example, cholesterol sulfate, it delivers sulfate to the cells. But in order to deliver it, you've got to take the sulfate off of the cholesterol and put it on something else. And that's where the sulfur transferase would come in and wouldn't be able to do that.
I know, gets a little geeky, but the point is that without the proper amount of sulfur in the body, and now it's being disrupted because of the GMOs, even more than what it was already doing, it's not good. So we think that this sulfur product that we've been promoting is really helping people to keep everything kind of working well, because this whole sulfur cycle is kind of God's way of keeping the bad guys out and exiting the body. And because our sulfur is absolutely pure with no additives, it's different from almost all the other ones out there. You can click an order, three prices, right on our website, oneradionetwork.com. Andrew, have you seen this story about California glyphosates? Oh, I don't think he's there. He probably stepped out for a second. This guy from Reuters. California is listing the herbicide glyphosate as cancer-causing chemical. Effective July 7th, California, the fifth largest economy, state's Office of Environmental Health Hazard, said the DEHA that is being listed as a chemical that causes cancer. And this then is really the second nail, hopefully, perhaps, in the GMO coffin, because, you know, the GMO and the glyphosate, that's all one thing, the Roundup, it's all one package. That's the way it works. To be a GMO thing, you got to use the Roundup thing and all that stuff. The World Health Organization, they said that that the glyphosate also causes cancer. That was a couple of years ago. So if this sticks, and you know that Monsanto's going to lawyer up, and boy, and they're going to lawyer up, and they're going to fight this. But so California's decision makes it a national leader in protecting people from cancer-causing pesticides, says Nathan Donnelly, senior scientist at the Center for Biological Diversity. So we'll see how it plays out. But if this whole just going to be a good thing for those people who do not want to have GMOs in their body. Here's master herbalist Stephen Buhner giving some insights, guys, on why this pine pollen could boost your testosterone levels.
The pollen itself is extremely high in a number of male estrogens, the most potent of which is testosterone. And it's got a fairly high level of it. I mean, it's still in the micrograms, but that's really all the difference between us and women, is that we have this microgram more than they do. And then in the womb, that shifts us into the male developmental pattern. So when we start adding that stuff back in to our bloodstream, which you do if you take that sort of tincture and you hold it in your mouth for a while and then you swallow it without putting it in any water or anything, it goes right through the mucous membranes into the bloodstream, and so you start to get an increase in the body of actual testosterone, which then circulates to pretty much every cell in the body, and that then begins to increase vitality and muscle strength and everything else.
This is a great product. I've taken it for years. You can click and order an Easter Thrival link. Different variations in the pine pollen, potency and price, take your pick, right here on OneRadioNetwork.com. If you are kind of thinking that I'd like to do a little more exercise, I don't want to do, I don't want to jog because that's boring. Who wants to go to the gym? You know, get in the car and do all that whole thing and pay somebody and then run around like a nut. You can just get a little rebounder for $339 and pretty much do a lot. I mean, I'm using these little weights, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pounds. You can do, you know, get stronger and stronger, just increasing them. They have these little weights at the exercise sports places around the country. I'm sure they got them on Amazon. You can start at 2 pounders. And what's pretty cool is, for example, yesterday I was doing a 4 pound weight and just doing jumping jacks on the rebounder, two of them, and then doing it maybe for 3, 4, 5 minutes, long time. You try doing that on the ground. Just do that and see how long you can do it. It doesn't seem like much, but it's pretty. And the cool thing is with the rebounder, so you're jumping up in the air, you have 8 extra pounds, right? And depending on how you jump, you have a G-force that puts maybe 16 up to 24 pounds of pressure on your muscles and building bone density. And it's actually your muscles think you're lifting 24 pounds or jumping jacks with 24 pounds rather than 8. So it's like, it's really kind of magical. And this is why the NASA folks figured out that rebounding was the best way to help the astronauts get back bone density after they were doing research on this years ago after space flights, because when you go up in space with no, you know, with no gravity and stuff like that, you actually lose bone density pretty quickly. The only reason we keep our bone density and can keep walking is because of gravity. It's an Einstein thing, you know, check it out. Anyway, if you'd like to get a rebounder, $339 delivered, tax title license, a lifetime warranty. You can click and order front page, oneradionetwork.com.
From the Hill Country in Texas, this is oneradionetwork.com.
Broadcasting live, weekday morning, this is listener-supported One Radio Network.
Andrew, I think you were probably off mic here because I...
That's possible.
Yeah, you're during the spot, but you probably didn't hear. Did you hear about this story?
California and the glyphosates,
yeah.
Glyphosates,
I think, is the best way. So that'll be
interesting. And my response was, did you hear about Illinois? Forgive me.
Well, I was about to go there. Boy, I tell you what. Illinois is really, they may be the first state to declare bankruptcy.
Yeah.
Whoa.
The lead deadbeat.
Double.
I mean, they got $130 billion in unfunded pension obligations. And they have a backlog of unpaid bills, like vendors screaming for payment, about $15 billion.
Wow.
It's so bad that the lottery, if you have a lottery ticket...
You're not even getting paid.
I would cash it in if you can, because by the 30th, which is 2 days from now, they don't have the money to pay. So they're going to have to stop selling lottery tickets because they can't pay if somebody wins.
So this thing got belly up mostly, will you tell us, because of the pensions?
Yeah.
What they were given, like the firefighters and the
everybody,
cops,
everybody. Everybody who would promise to vote for them and get their to get their friends to vote. I'll give you a job and a pension, and you just got to vote for me. So over the years, naturally, it's gotten worse. And now they've been without a budget for 2 or 3 years. I think it'll be the third year where they don't have a budget. It's so bad that financial firms such as Moody's and Standard & Poor's and all
right,
that,
yeah.
They're going to call their bonds junk. You know, this is, if you have an Illinois municipal bond, can you imagine? A state bond is junk, like you might not get paid.
And what Moody's is talking about was an interesting story. They started doing the math. You know, they get their geeks on the computer. And see, a lot of these pension funds, if my understanding is correct, they are invested in the stock market, right?
Yeah.
Okay, if this stock market is really as bubbly as we believe, right? As you've conjectured, and Warren Buffett, a lot of people, or Jim Rogers, and they start losing 5% or 10%. Moody says they could go up to $3 trillion in the red, like overnight.
Yes.
That's not good.
Well, because remember,
that's not
the deficit of $180 billion.
Right.
Figures they're going to have a stock market that's just booming for the next
decade. So that's if I see. So the number is if it booms.
Yes.
Man.
Yeah.
So what are they going to do here, Tiger? You know.
Well, hey, they won't be the first. You know, Mississippi defaulted on their bonds back in 1841.
Well, good, 1841. Is that the last time somebody's?
I think so. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. 1841 was pretty much it, and it changed the attitude certainly of investors. Today, investors feel like giving their money to Greece. Oh, excuse me. Did I say Greece?
Yeah,
I meant Illinois. Is just like putting it in the bank, right? It's the safest thing there is.
And see, and what you know, just and you think about. How many millions of pensionees mm-hmm. are counting on this money who live in the state? I mean, that's not going to be good either. This is going to get really ugly.
No, it's not.
What, do you just kind of move from Illinois?
I'm not, you know.
Man.
Well, if you own property in Illinois, or if you live in Illinois, they will turn increasingly to you, the taxpayer, and say, you got to pony up, man. You got to pay these bills because it's not really, let's get down to it. It's not the legislature's bills. It's not the governor's bills. It's the people's bills. And so the people, through higher state income tax, through higher gas taxes, through higher property taxes, will be called upon to pay this bill. That's why I'm getting the hell out of New Jersey. I promise you that, because New Jersey's second only to Illinois.
Yeah. And places like Boston also, right?
Well, they'll get theirs. But for right now, the spotlight is on Illinois and Puerto Rico. And New Jersey.
And the Virgin Islands.
And the
Did
Virgin
you see that?
Yes.
They're next.
Yeah. Well.
Oh, man. I thought that was like a little paradise thing. I was going to go live there. No, yeah. I don't think so.
Yeah.
The Virgin Islands, they're going through the same thing. United States Virgin Islands is best known for their little beaches and all that. The public debts of the Virgin Islands are much smaller than those of Puerto Rico, but so is the population and their ability to pay. The tropical territory, roughly 100,000 people, they owe $6.5 billion to pensioners and creditors. And guess what? Oops, we don't have the money.
Yeah.
Man.
Well, I would say that we've got about a quarter of our states in this category.
A quarter. The pension thing.
Yeah.
Man.
And Connecticut, believe it or not, you know, you would think of Connecticut as a wealthy state. Not so. They have enormous unfunded liabilities, too, in their pension accounts. I think theirs is like $105 billion in unfunded pension liabilities, and they're a heck of a lot smaller than Illinois. So there are problems.
So these things, help us out, talk to us like we're a golden retriever. These things all went bad. This is kind of a karmic thing that's all coming to roost at the same time, which is really interesting when you think about it, because they've been doing it for 100 years, right?
Or that's right.
You know, long time.
That's correct.
All these people, firefighters, police, government workers.
Well, really since the closing of the gold window.
Uh-huh.
You know, with the closing of the gold window, the idea that, oh, you're a state and you need to borrow money, you should have no trouble getting it, even though you don't have it in current funds, we'll go ahead and loan it to you. So if you took the people of Connecticut,
yeah,
and you lined them all up, every citizen, man, woman, child in Connecticut, and say to them, okay, give us $500, then Connecticut's out of trouble. So it's not so bad.
Not so bad.
You just have to get everyone to pay $500 in the whole state. And they're probably the worst of it. Massachusetts, around $350. Illinois, I think, is not too bad per capita. But see, there's a lot of people in that state to whom $500 would be, you know,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
All the money in the world.
They don't have it.
Yeah. So, and the list goes on. You know, if you live in New Jersey, if you live in Illinois, if you live in Kentucky or Hawaii or California or Maine or New York, you're in the top 10. And that's the worst of it. So it does get better after that, but there are not too many things on the horizon to unravel. See, you know, it's not like the federal government can step in, right? They're... Who's not talking about a government shutdown now? Have you heard that talk? I thought it, somebody told me it was the front page of one of the big papers yesterday. It's a government shutdown looming in September.
Well, so these things went bad because they did a defined benefit. So they said, George, you worked for 20 years and you're going to get this.
Or you worked for 5 years.
Or whatever. You're going to get this and that's it.
Yeah.
And so that's why the numbers don't work.
Right, of course.
The numbers just don't work.
Well, they count on the same thing as Social Security. And you think of how the politicians operate, the same way Social Security trust funds do. Well, we've got all this money in the pension fund, and these workers aren't retiring for another 20 years. Let's just take some of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they've done. So not only have they not funded their pensions each year, but they've taken money from the pension fund when it suited them in the form of borrowing.
Just out this morning, Powerball in Illinois. The tickets are suspended as of 9 o'clock tonight.
Oh, great.
Oh, boy. Get some at 8:50.
Now, how many lawsuits they're going to have there?
Jeez.
How much confidence in the system is going to be shaken there where you've already bought a ticket?
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Oh. Fed raises student loan rates 15% to 4.75 on 10-year. I see. And then your kid is a G2 employee. What does that mean? I just saw this headline. G2 employee.
Well, their ability to have their wages or assets seized in order to pay these bills is, well,
if they don't
pay. Legendary by now.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you literally cannot escape a student loan, just much the same way as a government employee.
They just come break your legs like Uncle Tony, huh?
Right. Yeah. Well, they take your everything. You know, you cannot escape it through bankruptcy or anything else.
I see. Well, that's the way it should be, right?
No.
No. Why?
And we don't have that kind of time.
You don't have that kind of time. All right, we won't go there this morning.
You know, these institutions of higher learning that refuse to teach kids how to make a living. They want to teach them instead about, you know, ancient artists and poets. It just doesn't make sense to me. And then they take half their tuition and put it aside.
Gotcha.
So that they can pay their salaries.
So you're saying that what they're selling them is a pig in a poke anyway.
Yeah.
And so why would you have to, you know...
Yeah.
No.
And why would you let them build up these fat endowments? Hey, there's a good Google, college endowments.
Oh, man.
And, you know, these guys they're so on us about what we should give. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should just, like, seize all the college endowments in this country, hand those out as social benefits.
I know that the University of Texas has piles of gold, just piles of gold. Wow. That was a lot.
Why shouldn't they just draw money from the treasury like every other state institution? Why shouldn't they have to turn to their state legislature and say, we need X amount of dollars in order to run our institutions for the year?
Mm-hmm. Well, I just Googled college endowments.
Oh, God.
Holy
cow. $500 billion or something?
I mean,
Harvard's got $3 million per student.
Per student?
Per student.
And they keep raising their... See, that's what's weird, Andrew. Are they raising the tuition because the kids can just borrow the money?
Correct.
No.
Correct.
That's ugly.
That's right. So if it was, in fact, cutting into their enrollment because, oh, God, people can't afford us, so we have to lower our cost. No, they're not getting that at all. And, you know, billions. We're talking not hundreds of millions. Billions. Billions of dollars.
Yeah, the last category here on the right is billions of dollars. And they all got
billions. They all have billions. They all have billions. Some of them have multiple billions, right? Princeton has $22 billion in its endowment.
Really?
Yeah.
University of Texas, they got $15 billion.
Yeah, Stanford, I think, is also in that 20-plus billion category. So, you know, there's a massive pile of money that these college institutions put on their endowments, and then they pay themselves handsome salaries and build nice
tenure, and they teach whatever they want to the kids.
That's it.
And nobody oversight, nothing like that. You know, they do medical universities and don't do any nutrition, and they just do whatever they want.
That's right.
They're huge.
Let's teach earth science.
Whatever, you know.
Climate.
Endowments per student. Wow. Amherst. What? Could this be true? $2 billion per student? No. $2.194 billion USD per student. Endowments per student. That can't be right. No.
Well.
No, there's something.
It seems like a lot, doesn't it?
No, I'm not looking at the right thing. 1950
in
dime. It's got billions.
No, I think it's 2 million per student. Not
oh,
sure
yeah.
What
oh,
you're
I'm
looking
sorry.
At.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2015 endowment per student. Yeah. In Amherst, it's a 1 million. Oh, yeah. I see. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then lots of them are 0.7 million.
Yeah. Yeah. Stuff right. Like most of them are a few hundred thousand, but even like the best ones
Stanford
on the list.
Stanford is 1.3 million per student. Yeah. I see what you're saying here. Yes.
Yeah. Even the best ones have 50
Yale.
Or 100,000.
Going to be a Yaley boy. They got 2 million per student
yeah,
there.
It's going to be one of those skull and bones dudes.
Skull and bones.
I think theirs is the biggest endowment at $26 billion.
Wow. Patrick Timpone, Andrew Goss, it is the real world of money. Let's do a little station break and just real quick here.